So this is the translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and the purport. O learned Brahmanas, when Sukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Parikshit, I heard him with rapt attention, and thus by his mercy I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I learned it from him, as I have realized it. One can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Sukadeva Goswami. One cannot, however, learn Bhagavatam from a bogus hired reciter whose aim of life is to earn some money out of such recitation and employ the earning in sex indulgence. No one can learn Srimad Bhagavatam who is associated with persons engaged in sex life. That is the secret of learning Bhagavatam. Nor can one learn Bhagavatam from one who interprets the text by his mundane scholarship. One has to learn Bhagavatam from the representative of Sukadeva Goswami and no one else. And if one at all wants to see Lord Krishna in the pages, that is the process and there is no alternative. Suta Goswami is a bona fide representative of Sukadeva Goswami because he wants to present the message which he received from the great learned Brahmana. Sukadeva Goswami presented Bhagavatam as he heard it from his great father, and so also Suta Goswami is presenting Bhagavatam as he heard it from Sukadeva Goswami. Simply hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. I'm just going to repeat that one. Simply hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. So the whole theme of this is this word nivishta, proper attention. The word nivishta means that Suta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. The secret anointed Bhagavatam is mentioned here. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. But somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person, at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Sri Krishna in person in the pages of Bhagavatam. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare Tatra Kirtayato Vipra Vipra Rishi Buri Tejasaha Aham Chadya Gamam Tatra Nivishtastad Anugrahat So ham baha shravishyami yata titam yata mati. O learned Brahmanas, when Sukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Parikshit, I heard him with rapt attention, and thus by his mercy I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I learned it from him and as I have realized it. Mukam karoti vachanam pangum langayate girim tad. Kripa ham vande Sri Gurum Dina Taranam. All right, I wasn't going to give this class. I actually wanted to back out of the class, especially when I see all the senior devotees here. So please forgive me. And I will make mistakes, conditioned souls. So please forgive me for doing that. But before I start, I was inspired by Shruti Dharma Prabhu's class the other day. He came in on a Wednesday evening and he gave a class. And as you know, that he has brain cancer and it's a very tough time. And he was given his realizations, and he was speaking about Tribhuvana Prabhu, who inspired him a lot and made him join and take up Krishna consciousness seriously. And he was inspired by Tribhuvana Prabhu. And I was thinking to myself that, look, I'm 42 years old. I've been in the movement for over 20 years. I'm still on a Natta Nivritti stage. I haven't moved into Nishta or anything higher. And And if I was given the same conditions that I had brain cancer and I had, and you know, I could die at any moment, what regrets would I have? Because Shruti Dhammaprabhu doesn't have any regrets, because I've seen him for over 20 years when he was a brahmachari, and then when he took Grihastha Ashram, he carried on in the same mood, preaching, maintaining, taking care of devotees. This is a lovely place. It's because of his hard work and the devotees that were working with him. So I was thinking to myself that if that was pressed upon me, if it happened to me, I'll have the biggest regret of my life would be that I didn't speak when I was asked to speak. I was asked to speak many times to give classes, but I just said no out of false ego. You know, low self-esteem. So he inspired me. So that's why I'm speaking today. I actually canceled the class, but then, you know, after hearing that class, I told Nishkinchana Prabhu, I've got to do it. Because I don't want to die. If I have to die, obviously we do. I don't want to die with the regret that I could have given more classes or I could have preached more in Krishna consciousness. So obviously, we're at the start of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and most people know the story, but it's a very serious book because it was created out of a very serious situation. Maharaj Parikshit was the emperor of the world. He was very young. He was in his 30s. He's the grandson of Arjun. And when Krishna left the world, Yudhishthira Maharaj, who was the emperor of the world, who trained up Maharaj Parikshit and all the Pandavas brothers, decided, hey, I'm not going to stay here anymore. If Krishna's not here, I'm going. So he did Mahaprasthan with the Pandavas and left this world. And he gave it all to Maharaj Parikshit, who was young. And he had a son and a young wife. And he just gave it to him. And that's what's detachment. He's emperor of the whole world, Yudhishthira Maharaj, and he gives it up. Just like that. He just gives it up. When Krishna leaves the world, he said, I'm not staying here. There's nothing for me to do. I want to go. I've set up the situation for Maharaj Parikshit, and I'm going. So Maharaj Parikshit, he's in a similar situation. He's been cursed, and he's going to die. And he leaves his wife, and he leaves his son, and he leaves the kingdom. He just leaves it. He wants to go too. And I remember I was with my spiritual master once. His Holiness Bhakti Charles Swami. And Bhakti Titta Swami just passed away. It was 2005. And Shruti Dhammaprabhu said to my Guru Maharaj, who's going to be next? Which spiritual personality is going to die now? Who's going to go next? And my Guru said to Shruti Dhammaprabhu, I wish it's me. I wish Prabhupada takes me. So we cannot be attached to this material world, no matter which position you're in, mother, father, husband, wife, sannyasi, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, you cannot be attached. You just have to give it up. When the time comes, Krishna's telling you to go, give it up. So in my mind, one day I looked at my charts and, you're going to live up to 80. You know, I was thinking that in my mind. And my Gurudev chastised me at that moment. I didn't tell him. He just told me, don't think you're going to live for a long time. You could die at any moment. Be prepared to leave your body at any moment. And I was thinking, where did that come from? He just said it. Because he was chastising me for other things I was doing. But in my mind at that moment, I was thinking that, I'm going to live a long life. So you can take it easy. You know, we think that, we're going to live a long life. We think we're not going to die young. But in my experience, when I look at the Krishna conscious movement, many of the leaders die young, like Tamakrishna Goswami, Tribhuvanath Prabhu, Sridhar Maharaj, Bhakti Titta Swami, George Harrison. Many just die at a young age. Tribhuvanath Prabhu was only 49, 50 years old, passed away. I just now heard Mahaaksha Prabhu has passed away. Mahaaksha Prabhu, a few days ago, passed away in Thailand, Prabhupada disciple. They are going. Left, right, and center, they are going back to Godhead. They're just going. And so this shloka is very important to keep the tradition alive. There was a devotee who did a survey of all the major religious traditions of the world. And from his research, he came to the conclusion to keep a tradition alive in ISKCON, it's through the books, Srila Prabhupada's books. That's how you pass from one generation, Prabhupada disciples, to the grand disciples, to the great-grand disciples, through the books. That's why the books are the most important assets. That's why Prabhupada kept BBT separate from ISKCON. Do you know that? He kept it separate so it doesn't get touched. The books continue to be printed. Temples collapse, the books still go out. You can still practice through the books. Books are the basis of our movement. And that's how we keep the tradition alive. Otherwise, you know, we hear one thing and then there's a deviation and then it goes off tangent. So when you go back to Prabhupada's books, you go, oh, Prabhupada said this. This is what Prabhupada meant. So Parikshit Maharaj, he's about to die. He's got 7 days. So he goes into the forest and he's looking for a guru and Sukadeva Goswami arrives. And Suta Goswami is in that assembly and he's listening to the same Bhagavatam that Parikshit Maharaj is listening to. And then Suta Goswami is saying that he has heard it from Sukadeva Goswami with rapt attention, nivishta, rapt attention. This is what the whole shloka is about, nivishta, rapt attention. And he heard it with rapt attention, and because he heard it with rapt attention, proper attention, he understood it to his capacity, and now he's explaining it. So, there's a story in Chaitanya Charitamrita of a devotee called Bhagwan Acharya from Bengal, and he wants to present a poem to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from his own understanding of Krishna consciousness and speculation. He wants to give a poem. But nobody's allowed to just turn up and give a poem to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They have to go through Sarup Damodar Goswami, who is the intimate personal secretary. I think he's Lalita Vishaka, one of the gopis. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radharani and Krishna, so his intimate associate is Sarup Damodar. So he's constantly begging Sarup Damodar, please, please, let me give this poem. Let me read it to you. At least let me read it to you so that you can understand it. And then if you like it, then I can read it in front of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So after a while, he says, okay, read it. So then he talks about Lord Jagannath and Lord Chaitanya, and he makes a difference between Lord Jagannath's body and it's different from Lord Jagannath, the super soul. He makes a difference. So we have a difference. We have a body. It's called Dehina. Dehina in Sanskrit means embodied. The spirit soul is embodied. That's called Dehina. So there's a difference between our body and our soul. But with Lord Jagannath or the deity Krishna there's no difference. It's perfect. No difference between the deity. Yeah, there's no difference between Krishna and the deity. So Sarup Damodar was chastising him that you're going to hell for doing this. You can't do this. You can't make a distinction and make a difference between Lord Jagannath and the deity. So then, this is an extension to the shloka here. Sarup Damodar says, if you want to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, you must approach a self-realized Vaishnava and hear from him. You can do this when you have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, in extension to what Prabhupada is saying, Prabhupada is also saying, in India especially, there is now a class of professional Bhagavatam reciters, readers, whose means of livelihood is to go to village, town to town, reading Bhagavatam and collecting dakshina. So you see that in India a lot. You know, 7 days saptaha, they come down and basically they want to make money. And not only Bhagavatam, you do it with kirtan too. Once I remember, I wanted to organize a kirtan event, and devotees said, you have to give us $2,000 and we'll come and do kirtan. I won't mention names, but it's bogus. You can pay for someone's travel. That's fine. Expenses. But you don't pay to chant the holy name, nor do you pay to recite Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam and the holy name is not there for one's livelihood or income, and especially for those who use that livelihood and income for sense gratification. If you are giving Bhagavatam, or if you are giving Kirtan, and someone gives you a donation, that donation is coming to you, and then at least, Ayendra Prabhu says, 50% of that goes to charity. 50% of that donation that's come to you should go in the propagation of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there is reactions. Prabhupada would get money from rich people, yes? Rich materialists. So you know what he would do? He'll give it to the deities. He wouldn't take it for himself. He'll give it to the deities. Once I wanted to give money to Gauranga Prabhu from, you know, Radha Gopinath temple, he wouldn't touch it. He said, put it in my bag. So he didn't want to touch it because there is a reaction. You touch the money. So when people give me money, I go in front of my Panchatattva deities because I'm a tutor. People do give me cash. And I just offer the money to the deities immediately and then I use it. So that's how you purify. See, that's how you purify. You just offer it. So there is now a system of Bhagavata business where with recitations called Bhagavata Sapta that continue for 1 week. Although this is not mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, nowhere does Srimad Bhagavatam say that you should do a 7-day. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. You should do a 7-day. In fact, it says one should regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam from a self-realized Vaishnava, and it should be daily. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. The proper process, but people are accustomed to being misled by professional Bhagavatam reciters. So you basically get people who are very good at making jokes, who are very good at attracting, arousing the attentions of people. And so they get paid money to say so many nice and sweet things about Radha Krishna pastimes, and they have no clue about it, no understanding whatsoever. And these are called professional reciters. And some of them know all 18,000 shlokas of the Bhagavatam by heart. They just know it. They memorize. From childhood, they're just memorizing these things so that they can just impress people. But there's nothing. There's no tinge of selfless service. It's just simply, it's a profession. And you get that a lot in India. Even to this day, it's even worse. Then you get the other type of people that are mundane scholars, who are professors in universities, who read Srimad Bhagavatam from a distance, but they haven't actually understood it. And Prabhupada had to have a lot of discussions with these people, and he would chastise the hell out of them, basically. He would really, like, what do you know? You know, that type of, the way Prabhupada would approach them, because they would just misinterpret it, and they would go straight to the 10th canto, and they would think Krishna is with the gopis, therefore it's just the same as a guy with a bunch of women, and misinterpret it. So it would be said. So Prabhupada is saying that the speaker has to be bona fide. Speaker, obviously, he must come from the parampara, from the same lineage, has heard it from his spiritual master, and it goes all the way up to Sukadev Goswami. The speaker can't be deviating. We all know the qualifications of the speaker. We all know that. Look, people are going to sleep here. And this lecture is perfect for that because you have to have proper attention, nivishta. So, you know, try and be awake, please. I'm not a funny man, but I have to crack a joke, I'll do it. Right. So the speaker we know has to be qualified, and we can see that in his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He's qualified. He's more than qualified. But if he just came with a bunch of books, that's not enough. He had to make us qualified to hear his message. You know, in order to do this class, you know what I had to do to prepare for this? I first checked on the web if Prabhupada gave a lecture on this verse. There was no recording. There was no recording of this class by Prabhupada. So then I go to ISKCON Desire Tree. This is a tip for anyone who has to give classes. And I go to SrimadBhagavatamClasses.com. And then there was lectures by Radha Gopinath Prabhu, Urmila Devidasi, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, Radha Gopinath, basically 6 or 7 lectures. So I started hearing all these lectures, because you've got to prepare yourself. You can't just sit here and just waffle. It has to be similar to what the previous devotees have done. So I did that. Then I read this, and then I've just come to the, come to my own realizations, because you have to have some input. You can't just be a parrot. You can't just say it and have no understanding. So this is how I prepared for this class. And Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, in the class, this same class, is saying that Prabhupada couldn't just come with a bunch of books and say, here, listen to me. He had to create an institution where we become qualified to hear from him. Because if you're not qualified to hear, you won't get it. It'll just go in one ear and come out the other. And forget about spiritual. I do this all the time when I teach my students. I teach, young children, 9, 10, 11-year-olds. I teach them 11 plus. And as a teacher, you know who's getting it and who's not understanding. And it's simply by body language, by the questions or lack of questions, and by the way they look at you, the way they speak, the way they do their homework, the way they answer the questions. And everything is based upon nirishtha, proper attention, rapt attention. Yeah, it's based upon that. So in Krishna consciousness, this is what rapt attention means. You have to have proper attention. It's not just, I'm hearing Bhagavatam, which many people do. They hear Bhagavatam. I'm not talking about you guys. I'm talking about in India. They hear Bhagavatam because it's a pious activity to sit there for 7 days and hear and take it in one ear, and it goes out the other, and they go home and they carry on leading life and no change in the heart. It's because the speaker is not qualified. If the speaker is qualified, you will see a difference. You'll see a difference. If the speaker is qualified and you wish to be qualified, you will see that change. The change. And Prabhupada showed it. Just by coming to the West, he could change people's hearts. Rapt attention. I don't think we have a problem with rapt attention, because in the material world, everyone is very good with rapt attention. So I was looking up these people that play video games. And you can die by playing video games. So there was one guy for 24 hours, non-stop, no eating or sleeping, was playing a video game. And because he didn't have any sleep, he just knocked out and he died. He just died. Lack of sleep. He just died. Another guy, for 5 days in a row, he's playing a video game, online gaming. He had a broken leg. That's why he was playing games at home. And if you sit on the plane for too long, you can get thrombosis, So he had a heart attack and he died. Right? It sounds funny, isn't it? Another guy, for 3 days and 3 nights, he didn't eat or sleep, and he died of starvation because he didn't drink. Playing video games. So I don't think there's a problem with rapt attention, People do have rapt attention, but the thing is they need taste. So how do we get rapt attention for Bhagavatam or for the holy name? How do we get rapt attention for service? How do we get that? So Prabhupada explains it in a nutshell. You have to have a pure mind. And to have a pure mind, you have to have pure actions. And to have pure actions, you must be pure in eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing, Prabhupada says. Fearing. Fearing means defending. So I'm going to go through that. And I'll start off with the eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. When I give a talk, I have to give it to the audience, and I can see all of you are senior devotees, so you already know what I'm going to say. But there's people online who couldn't be bothered to come in. And that's I'm like that. I'll just sit in my bed watching the Bhagavatam, Or you just are in different parts of the world, or you're sick. So for your benefit too, I'll just explain what eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing is, okay? So everything To get the full benefit of Krishna consciousness, one should be in the mode of goodness rather than passion and ignorance. Definitely on the mode of goodness, so you can transcend that by being in the mode of pure goodness. And so eating has to be done in the right way, right? And please forgive me if I offend anyone here. I'm simply a messenger. Yeah, I just come in and go out. That's it, you know. I don't have any position in this going. I just say it as it is. And that's what I like. So eating must be done regularly and properly and attentively. And my problem was I took it seriously. You know, when they said eat up to your neck, Prabhupada would say that. And I did that for 20 years. But then later on I realized that he didn't mean it for your whole life. He just meant it at the start, eat as much prasadam, constantly eat the prasadam, because the prasadam will, you know, help you to understand the deeper topics of Krishna consciousness. So I contracted diabetes because of that. When I was 35, 36, I'm 42, but, you know, I thought I was immune to this type of thing, but I got diabetes. And it's because I just overate, and I was 14-something stones, and I was just like, you know, lethargic, lazy, you know, whatever, because that's what happens when you put on weight and you just paneer, paneer, paneer all the time. And too much sweets and maha sweets and all these things. But to become pure in eating means to be regulated in eating. So you have to eat at the right time and you have to eat the right foods and you can't overeat. And you have to fast. And I know devotees don't like that word, fasting. But the only way I could control my diabetes is through fasting. And so if you go onto YouTube, which I do a lot in the right way, there's a lot of knowledge on intermittent fasting. Yes, a lot of knowledge. And it works. And it's from the Vedic scriptures. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Sri Sri Gaurinitai. And I can't go into it in a deep way because we haven't got enough time. But just check it out on YouTube. Intermittent fasting. Dr. Eric Berg. He's a doctor in America. And he's a different type of doctor. He's a doctor that, you know, does a lot of research and looks at natural ways of being healthy. And he talks about intermittent fasting. And I share this with many devotees, and they've changed their lives by doing this. And you can do it in many different ways. You can do 16 hours a day fasting. Oh, my God. But it works. Dr. Eric Berg, B-E-R-G, intermittent fasting. And it regulates your whole life, regulates your mind. You know, when I was eating paneer, like, you know, I don't know, I can't use any animal, like a pig. So I found out through research, paneer, too much paneer, fried paneer, can affect your brain, and you can get Alzheimer's or dementia. Don't tell me how. There was a research. It's on dandavats.com. You can see it. So, you know, we loved our stuff because we're vegetarians or vegans, but, you know, obviously we have to be very careful how much we eat and when we eat. Because if you eat too late at night, it affects sleeping. So some of you are really tired, and I can see that. Or maybe you had a late night. I had a late night. I went to the Hare Krishna festival in Swindon, so did you. And I got home by 12:30 at night. So it does affect you. And if you don't sleep regularly on time, and everyone has different time periods, some people need more time to sleep, especially if you're sick or pregnant women or children, they need more time. And some people don't need more time, like Margaret Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher was the head of this country from 1979 to 1990. And I looked at a documentary of her life. She's such a powerful, powerful woman who dominated the politics at a tough time. And when you look at her life, she only had 4 hours of sleep a day. 4 hours a day. She would survive on 4 hours a day and constantly working to help this great country. So, Prabhupada could survive on 4 hours of sleep 4 to 5 hours. And some of you could survive on 4 to 5 hours for a few days and then drop dead. But, you know, you need your sleep, because if you don't have your sleep, your body can't rejuvenate. And the brain needs to rejuvenate, and the cells need to rejuvenate. And so if you need your sleep, take your sleep, because there's no point sitting in a lecture falling asleep, which I see, you know. Better to just have, and the way to be alert is to have a power nap. So when you're feeling tired, you just have a nap. And for 10 minutes, believe me, you're awake the whole night. If I have a power nap for 10 minutes, just 10 minutes during the day, I'm awake until midnight. Because your body's just rejuvenating. And a lot of business people do that, or doctors do that. They have a room where they can just have a power nap, even for an hour, and then they're alert. In Spain, they call it siesta. It's more than 10 minutes. Fiesta, siesta. So they do 2 hours, but then they're awake until 2 in the morning. Literally, you can walk down the road in Malaga and you see the shops are open and people in the bars and everyone is joking around up to 2 in the morning because they've had a nap from 12 to 2. So they know how to do it, don't they? Materially. So eating has to be regulated. Sleeping has to be regulated. Mating, I'm not going to really go into that right now. But because a lot of people here are celibate monks, but the thing is, it's all I can say is samskar, garbhadham samskar. That's how you can purify that ritual. Okay. Now, the one that I really like is fearing, because we're all fearful, materially speaking. But to purify it, because we should be fearless, there is ways that you should be fearful. And you should be fearful of offending devotees or offending the deities and offending and be fearful of Maya. Prabhupada said that one of the problems with his disciples were, the young disciples at that time were, that they weren't afraid of Maya. They were fearless, but they weren't afraid of Maya. And I'm afraid of Maya. Because Tribhuvana Prabhu said, I'm paraphrasing, that Maya can make you think you're practicing properly when you're not. Think about that. She'll make you think you're okay when you're not okay. She'll make you think that you're following, but when you're not following, you're actually deviating, and it's really slowly. And if you give Maya an inch, she'll take a mile. She'll take a mile. And Tamakrishna Goswami was told by Prabhupada this story of how Maya works. So you're on a train in India, and if anyone been on a train in India, right, it's chaotic. It's like you're lucky to even walk in the train, especially in Mumbai. And you're sitting on the train, and it's packed. So every seat is packed, and some skinny Indian guy comes on the train with his whole family, and you don't know his whole family is there, but he's looking at you, trying to figure out if he can sit. Prabhupada is telling this story to Tamakrishna Goswami. He's trying to figure out how is he going to get a seat. So he's looking at you, and you know he's looking at you, but you're just turning your eyes around because you don't want to give up your seat for him. So he sees a slight gap, and he just sits right between you and the next person. And you see that, isn't it? Yeah? I hate being in a queue in India, I tell you. It's the most irritating thing. They just push in, you know? All right, so I got my, you know, gripes about that. So he sits there and he pushes you to the side. So you get pushed. Just by a little gap that he saw, he took advantage. Then he brings his son, he sits on his lap, brings his daughter, sits on his lap. And then you're getting a bit more like agitated. So you move a bit more, give more space. And then he brings his wife. And she's not skinny. Eventually, you just give up your seat and walk off. So that's what Maya does. She'll come in very slowly and carefully, and you just don't really notice it, and you give her a little bit, little bit, little bit. I've had my fall down, so I can tell you what it's like, you know? You just give a little bit, little bit, little bit, and then eventually you just, hey, you know, you've just lost it. So you have to be fearful of Maya at all times. And so Prabhupada, when he, before he walked into a house, I remember hearing this story, I can't give you the exact source. He was praying before he was walking into this rich man's house. And they were saying, the devotee saying, what are you doing, Prabhupada? He said, I'm praying to Krishna to protect me from the influence. Sometimes we think, well, hey man, we could take over the world with this stuff. But then when you're faced with Maya, who's super intelligent, she knows how to get your weakness, she can read your mind, and she'll find people that can exploit you. That's how clever Maya is. She's so clever. So clever. And she'll come in between you and your teachers, your spiritual master. She'll mess that relationship up. She's done it to me many times, where you lose faith. Even in Prabhupada, you can lose faith, or you can lose faith in the process, and Maya just knows how to do that. So we have to be fearful, and that's how you purify that. Now, defending, I've got a few stories about defending. Do we finish at 8:30? All right. Don't want to. So, with defending, in 1999, we had a crisis at Bhaktivedanta Manor. I walked into the manor one day, and I was watching brahmacharis with baseball bats. And I was thinking, they're doing their japa, and then they got a baseball bat in the left hand. I think Gadi Guru Prabhu remembers this, and a few others who were here at that time. And basically, all the powers of Bhaktivedanta Manor left for a patron's trip. So, you know, everyone's gone, and Pradyumna Prabhu is left in charge, who's the temple president of Leicester, and Tribhuvana Prabhu was around. And basically, we had some people attack the manor at night. A group of people came in attacking the manor, and they wanted to get to the shrine. So after that, all the devotees were armed. Knives, baseball bats. Everyone was armed, basically. And I was walking into a war, you know. And I just came because I was studying for my university, and I was getting bored at home, and I just wanted to stay over at the manor. And I didn't know I was going to be a bodyguard or something. So I came in, and they said, can you fight? And I go, yeah, I can fight a little. And then they tested me. They tried to hit me. Can't believe that. You know, try to attack me just to test me. And so then I was told to guard. I said, guard against who? And they said, these strong guys are going to come in the next day, and they're going to start attacking. And they were coming in at night. So that's how you purify defending, you know? That if the temples are going to be attacked, if the devotees are going to be attacked, if the deities are going to be attacked, there is no harm in defending. You have to defend, obviously legally. But you have to defend. In America, you can use guns, but in this country, you know, you have to use whatever's appropriate. So it was an amazing sight, because you see all these devotees would come at night. People that you've never seen in your life during the day will come at night to help defend the temple. All these congregation members. And there was only one woman who'd come every night, and her name was Krishna Purna. Some of you know her. And she would come. She was the only female that I would see. There was like 50 men, congregation members. I think the brahmacharis were sleeping. Some of them were awake. And we all had to be stationed outside the manor, on the grounds, in cars with torches and walkie-talkies, and just watch for any exits, because you could come from any of the fences around. And Tribhuvanath Prabhu was there, and he was leading us and guiding us and counseling us. And so there was one Mataji, she was there, you know, Krishna Purna, and she would cook the prasadam for us. And then it got to a point where we needed professional help. So Pradyumna Prabhu called someone called Lance, who was a professional bodyguard, like ex-army, and he brought 7 men. And I will never forget this. We're in the prasadam room, or in this room, the reception. 50 of us are there. These 7 men turn up, and the head said, the only way you're going to help us is if you all stay in this room. We will protect Bhaktivedanta Manor. You stay here. So the whole night, we're just sitting at the temple. We're thinking we're here to protect the manor, and these 7 men walked around and they protected it for weeks. They just walked around and they were fearless. And obviously they get paid, but it just shows you they were using their skills, their defense, and purifying it. It's amazing. Eventually, Tribhuvanath Prabhu had to go and speak to the leader of the other side who were attacking us. And he was so brave. He went there and he spoke to them, and he managed to convince them to leave us alone, and left. And to this day, it's over. There's a lot of things I want to say, but I know this Prashadam time, and I know what goes on in your minds and my minds when it's Prashadam time. So I'm going to stop there. I never really take questions because I don't really know enough to answer them. But if you have any comments, you can feel free to say, to correct me. But I'll just stop there for now. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.